Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. This is Upfront on Love Sport.
You're listening to Upfront with James Gray, the podcast edition. You can listen to me live every weekday from 1 p.m. on Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport.
This is Upfront with me, Paul Mortimer, on Love Sport. James Gray, I know you're listening, mate. I'm only keeping the seat warm. That's all I'm doing, okay? I've had to tighten the seat here, actually, because it's a bit loose-bounded. There's so much space sitting here. I'm just saying that, okay? James is off doing something posh. Is he some sort of spelling bee or something like that?
I think it's posher than that.
Is it really? Is he getting an MBE for something?
I think he's playing golf. The MBE's in the post.
The MBE's just for being posh, isn't it? it really is. I mean, he's so eloquent and very well spoken on radio. Now it's time for London Football News. And I'm joined by a blast from the past. Haven't seen him for a while. Haven't sat opposite each other for a while, Johnny Burrow, have we, mate?
I've been hiding from you, Mark.
You have. We're going to talk about especially the London games. Now, last night I had the fortune or ill fortune, whichever way you want to look at it, to go to Millwall and watch Queen's Park Rangers play.
Fortune.
It was freezing cold. There was no football played of any sort. It was literally a war of attrition. It was. After 10 minutes, I think the ball needed taking off. It needed substitute. It was the ball was in the air. It was knocked down football. It wasn't pretty. But, you know, and both of them, I think a win would have done them three. They need 3 points. A point was no good for either.
Absolutely. It's a missed opportunity for both of them. I had the guys from Ranger Things in for the QPR fan show on Tuesday night. And they were saying, listen, we get 3 points here and we're basically safe.
Yes.
It's a little bit sticky at the moment, but 3 points there and it's all okay. But the record for QPR away at the Den is terrible. Yeah. We know it's a tough place to go. And the kind of football that Neil Harris likes to play, it wasn't going to be easy on the pitch either. I'll be honest, I thought Millwall were going to beat them.
Me too. I'm a QPR fan. I actually thought, in leading up to the game, I thought, you know what? When you're playing the way Queen's Park Rangers are without enough fight, the Den is the worst place to go. Because not only do you get beat up as well. Because of the way they play, it's very, very, very physical, very attritional, very competitive. There are lots of challenges. Ref had a stinker, by the way, because he should have sent Joel Lynch off very early on. Lee Gregory, I think, was clean through. It was one of those that's come over their both their heads. And Joel Lynch is looking up at the ball and he has clipped Lee Gregory's feet, sent him over. The ref didn't give anything. It was real. I mean, it's 25 yards, maybe 10, 15 yards outside the box. But he's in. It's one of those. If he gives a free kick, he's got to send him off. And he ended up giving nothing. And that was a poor decision because it was a foul. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think he bottled it? In the sense that he's thinking, because the striker hasn't got the ball under control yet, if I send him off, people are going to say, well, hang on a minute, what if he misses it? So he just thought, you know what, I didn't see it.
I said at the time, he bottled it. He did bottle it. I don't care what anyone says. And it caused issues after that because there were a lot of tasty challenges on the back of that that came through. Millwall did feel aggrieved, I've got to say. The fans were giving him so much grief, and deservedly so. But Millwall didn't do enough to win the game. They didn't do enough.
And with that, do you think either of these teams are going to bottle it more on a bigger scale? Do you think we're going to see them exit the division? It's so, so tight down the bottom there. Millwall, Reading and Wigan all on 41 points. By the way, what an equaliser for Reading in the 97th minute. Just staggering stuff.
May I just say, I was on Ian Stone's show Monday and I actually did say, I fancy Reading. And he laughed at me and I went, no, this division is a strange one. The teams at the bottom, as poor as we've been, QPR, one of our wins recently was against Leeds.
Your only win for quite
exactly,
a while.
Since December. So this division is a weird one where teams at the bottom, Rotherham were leading Villa at one stage. You know, Wigan, I think, were leading Hull. So it's a real difficult and a real weird division.
If we look at the bottom part of that table, Ipswich, they're not down mathematically quite yet, but it's not looking pretty.
They're gone.
They're gone. I think Bolton, similarly, 32 points, unless something magical happens.
They're circling the plug hole as well. They're
slowly dripping down.
They are.
Rotherham are very much still in it. Mm. Of those teams, QPR are just about in the mix. Birmingham City, just about in the mix. Millwall, Reading, Wigan are all in it. It was a big, big chance to get a point, as you said, for Wigan. Chance to get 3 points. Hull is a tough place to go. Who of those three do we think is in the most trouble?
Well, Millwall got a game in hand. Mm. And if they win that, they get closer to QPR and Birmingham and further away from Reading and Wigan. And
Sheffield United away, though. That's a big ask.
It's huge. I mean, you know, and the thing about it is, you look at the top, you look at the middle, everyone who's got something to play for, they're playing each other. So it's really difficult. I mean, us, Queen's Park Rangers, Swansea next. It's ridiculous. The games are hard. They're really difficult. I can't call it. A little bit the same at the top. Take Norwich out of it. From second to sixth, I can't call who's going to finish second at the moment. Just like I can't call at the bottom because it's just too close. It's too close, Johnny. Although QPR will stay out of it. That's my heart speaking.
I think the head would agree with that as well, actually. I think QPR will just about be okay. The question, of course, there is who they bring in is Gaffer and how that'll affect it. There's an argument, I think, and if we look at some of the people we've heard they're interviewing, former club legends, have you yourself got a text at any point?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. I'm disappointed in that, but there you go. I'd have said no anyway.
You wouldn't take it?
Listen, a manager's job is horrible job. It is a horrible job. I wouldn't want to do it, I've got to say.
But I think there is a case for that appointment of going for a kind of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer style appointment.
Okay, when would you go for it?
I'd go for it as soon as possible.
Now?
I think you've got to. I wouldn't necessarily be appointing someone with a view to the long term. This is what I'm saying. I'd bring someone in who loves the club, who the fans love. I'm not saying a Gareth Ainsworth, because if you bring in Ainsworth, you're taking him from Wickham. Yeah. That needs to be a long-term thing. But someone who the fans love, like a Mark Burcham or someone in that sort of category, even a Holloway.
To arrest the slide.
Yeah, and lift the mood around the whole club.
I don't think Ollie would go back. He shouldn't have left in the first place.
I think he might go back.
Do you know what? Well, he loves the club. So I don't think he'd turn him down. But you're right. I mean, the more I was sitting there yesterday, I was asking, you know, some of the people there, you know, the Queen's Park Rangers people there, the club have a decision to make. A very, very big one. They haven't been great at making them recently. I don't think McLaren should have left, if I'm honest, because if you consider the cards he's got at his disposal, they're not great, you know. And also, what's his remit? Is it to keep Queen's Park Rangers up? I don't know, because if he does that, you judge him at the end of the season. It doesn't look like they're going to go down at the moment, but they need to arrest the slide. I'm just not sure. But Millwall, the game in hand, they fight. I'm down the bottom. You need teams that are going to roll their sleeves up and dig their way out of it. So, yeah, I think that they could do the job.
That final game of the season for Millwall is going to be massive. Millwall versus Wigan. That is going to be a cup final for both of those teams because you could easily see one of those two going down and it could come to that on the Sunday, 5th of May. That is going to be absolutely huge. There are other teams where you could actually see them getting points. You made the very good suggestion just there, Paul, that this is a division where anybody can beat anybody. Yeah. You're bang on, and I could actually see Millwall getting something against Brentford.
Well, they could. You know what? I'm looking at Reading, because between now and the end of the season, you need a card and fixture list. Reading have got Brentford, Bristol City, West Brom, Middlesbrough, and Birmingham. Now, it's not inconceivable that they could lose all of them.
No.
They really could. So they could find themselves in big trouble. Having said that, Queen's Park Rangers, Swansea, Blackburn, Nottingham Forest, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday. You know, there's teams there who are in and around the playoffs. So you need a kind fixture list to be able to save you. And, you know, Rotherham, Stoke, Swansea, Birmingham, West Brom, Middlesbrough. It's difficult. It really is.
Could you see Birmingham getting sucked down into that relegation quagmire? I mean, we're talking about QPR. They'll probably be okay. They're level on points, of course, with Birmingham City after that point deduction.
See, the thing about it is, without the point deduction, Birmingham are on the edge of the playoffs. That's what side they are. Mm. They're a good side. So, really, they're down there by default. They're not down there because of their performances. So, I fully expect them to have enough to get themselves out of it. I mean, they drew with Sheffield United yesterday. None of the teams down there would do that. So I fully expect them to have enough to get themselves out of it. It's no problem.
Love sports.
Guy Watts has joined us. How are you, Guy?
I'm well, Paul. You?
I am absolutely fine. but I'm reading this, and whenever I called you that, you had the ump. Guy Watts, posh sports reporter.
I didn't have the hump. Oh, I've not got an issue with that.
You haven't got an issue with that?
No, I don't. No, not at all.
It must be some other posh boy then.
It must be Johnny Barrow.
It must be Johnny Barrow, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Getting
well, you do look similar.
We
you
do both do look glasses. Similar. Quite tall. Yeah. I'll let you off.
So, you're talking about the Masters?
Indeed, yeah. It's just got underway in the last few minutes. Of course, at 1:15, there were the ceremonial starters.
Yes.
Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, and since the sad passing of Arnold Palmer a few years ago, he's been replaced by Tom Watson,
right.
All multiple Masters winners, and they hit a sort of ceremonial tee shot to kick things off. And it's a nice tradition, and to be honest, it's quite amazing how good their swings still look.
I was just about to ask you that.
Gary Player is certainly into his 80s, and Jack Nicklaus isn't far off himself. Tom Watson a little bit younger, but not a young man either, and they've all got swings that make me quite envious. But yeah, in the last 5 minutes or so, the very first group of this year's Masters, Andrew Landry, Adam Long and Corey Connors, not the most eye-catchy, not the most spectacular of groups, but it is completely random how it's drawn out, so there's no sort of deliberate waiting till later in the day to get the big names out. It's just how it comes out of the bag. Later on, of course, and we'll be keeping an eye on this throughout the drive time show in a couple of hours' time, Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, as it happens, are teeing off in consecutive groups just after 4 o'clock. That, I suppose, is when eyes really will start to turn over to Georgia and see what's happening over there.
What do you think? Who do you think is going to win it? Who would you have your money bet responsibly? Who would you have your money on?
Rory McIlroy.
Really?
For me, is favourite for very good reason. And having not backed Tiger Roll in the Grand National last Saturday,
Hold on, you didn't?
I didn't.
Why didn't you?
Well, look, that's why you shouldn't listen to anything I've got to say, Paul. But I didn't. And
producer
obviously,
Ben did.
He did he? Right, yeah, well, he did. I'll be getting him to buy me the next drink. having not backed him there and ended up feeling a little bit silly, I think Rory McIlroy, if he were to win, he's one of those that everyone will kick themselves.
Yeah.
Of course, there are other highly fancy players. Justin Rose is world number one. Tiger Woods always brings his best focus to these majors, even now in his lessened physical state. And there's loads of other guys that have a good chance. But if Rory wins, we'll look back and say, well, look, he'd come top six in his last six tournaments. He'd won the Players' Championship, the fifth major, the strongest field of any field in the golfing calendar just a month ago. So why weren't we saying he was going to win? He's the guy that, yes, he's going to have the most attention on him because he needs this to complete the career Grand Slam. But I think now he is ready to do it.
See, I look at him and he won a lot of majors in a short space of time when he was very young. And then, incredible, incredible feast. And now he's had a long famine. Does he have the mental wherewithal to be able to deal with it? Because he, like you say, the spotlight is going to be on him the whole way through. Is he going to be able to deal with that? Because I the match play, he lost to Tiger Woods, stormed off.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I think the answer will only know for sure when he does, or if he does win another major, we'll say, oh yes, he did have it all along. And if he never wins another major, we'll say, well, he didn't. He lost it at the age of 25, 26. Yeah. Incredible, but it did happen. I think, for what it's worth, that he does. I've been reading a lot of the interviews he's done, a lot of the kind of columnists and the commentators, what they've had to say. He seems to be in a pretty kind of a very calm state of mind. He's almost reached a nirvana, I think, certainly when it comes to the Masters, because he knows that the pressure's always going to be on him to win it and complete the Grand Slam, and he's sort of come to terms with that. I think for a few years after he'd won all the others, remember from 2015 onwards, he's only needed this one to complete the Grand Slam. Amazing, really. And I think for those first couple of years, 2015, 2016, maybe even 2017, he was over worrying about it. He wanted it too badly, as they say. And I think the last couple of years, he's grown up a little bit. Of course, this will be the last one before he turns 30. But he's been around such a long time. He's been contending at Grand Slams for the best part of a decade already. I think he's ready now because, and he said that's why he's playing so well. He says, I'm just in a place where playing good golf isn't the be-all and end-all anymore. And as a result, as these things happen sometimes, as a result, he's playing better golf.
See, the thing about his guy, in that time, there have been so many other players that have stepped up. I mean, Jordan Spieth sort of came and went. He's not
gone for good.
No, I don't think he has.
It could be, but I really don't think he is. He's too good a player. Again,
he is,
three
but
majors.
That decline is scary, though,
it is
Guy.
It really
is, you know?
He's fallen to the 30s. 32 in the world, I think he is. And what will be interesting this week is whether or not he can produce any of the old magic. Because remember, he won it in 2015. He'd come quite a close second to Bubba Watson the year before at the age of 20. Quite incredible,
He's got
really
a good record there, hasn't he?
Oh, an incredible record. Yeah. I think he's got a win and two second places and maybe a third place as
That's
well.
Right.
It's quite quite incredible.
It's ridiculous. For one so young as well.
For one so young. And remember, when he won it 4 years ago, he reached a lower score than any other player had ever reached, including Tiger, including Jack Nicklaus. He reached 19 under par.
That's
he eventually
right.
won it.
Yes.
Incredible. At 21 years old, he was. And so much promised. From Jordan Spieth, yeah. And he went on to win another couple of majors. He, like McIlroy, needs just the PGA to complete the career Grand Slam.
Okay, one quick question. If not Rory, who?
I would look at a couple of European, other European players. I really think it's a year for Europeans.
Okay.
Because Justin Rose is kind of the obvious one as well, number one. Mm. I'm hearing a lot of people who know a little bit more than I do tip Tommy Fleetwood.
Really?
And there are statistics that show that Tommy Fleetwood is doing extremely well in some of the categories that previous Masters winners have been doing extremely well in the build-up to the Masters.
Okay.
So things like strokes gained per round, which Rory McIlroy incidentally is top of, by the way, but Tommy Fleetwood is very high up there as well. What could count against him a little bit is, and I'm looking at the weather forecast, it's not great. There's even talk of a possible Monday finish for the first time in 40
years.
That won't suit anyone who's not a really long hitter. None of these guys are short hitters, but some are longer than others. Rory's one of them. Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, they're the guys that hit it miles and miles. Tommy Fleetwood, you wouldn't say distance is one of his big, big strengths. So he could suffer a little bit if the course is a bit wetter, if it's not rolling so far. But if there isn't a lot of rain, I think Tommy Fleetwood could be right in the mix come Sunday. He's definitely one to watch.
Okay. Well, I could listen to you for hours. I've got to say thanks a lot, Guy.
I could talk for hours, but you better stop me.
As you get an education here on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
Now, Manchester United must produce another unlikely Champions League comeback to keep their hopes alive after Barcelona left Old Trafford with a slender advantage following the quarterfinal first leg. On the line is former Manchester United forward Andy Ritchie. Good afternoon, Andy. Do you think they can do it?
Paul, they've done it before.
I know.
Who's to say they're not going to do it again? I mean, they did it the hard way at Juventus. They did it the hard way at PSG. Listen, they can do it again. Yes, there's a chance. We know that Barcelona are fantastic in the camp now. That it's all set up. I mean, there was a lot of debate last night about how Manchester United played. A lot of people said they didn't think they played well. I was at the game. I actually thought they did. I thought they played very well, but they just didn't really test their goalkeeper, did they? In the cold light of day. But there was some really good performances on United's side for me. Scott McTominay, I thought, was absolutely outstanding. Fred probably had his best game. And Victor Lindelof has played like that all season. I thought he was excellent as well.
I think, Andy, one of the things I've heard a lot of people say was the start was slow. They started slow. Yeah. How you look at Barcelona, you look at the talent, the array of talent they've got. What's your mindset going into a game like this? How do you put a team like Barcelona on the back foot?
Well, after that first initial 15 minutes, I think that United did that. I think they put them on the back foot. They had more of the game. I think it's pressure. But keeping that pressure up, as I think we saw in the last 15 minutes of the game, is hard to do, even if the fittest of people, because you know that they're very good in possession and you're going to have to chase the ball down quite a lot, and that saps your strength from other things that you want to do. So it's pressure, it's knowing when to press, knowing when to drop off. They're great at it themselves, so it's mirroring what they do, really. And I think a big thing is go in without fear and just say, listen, we've got to have a go at this. We're already 1-0 down, but if we get the first goal, and this is mirroring what they were saying at Juventus and what they were saying at PSG, and I think that'll be the mindset again.
Well, I look at it, and you know what? This is a tough one. Going to Barcelona, Messi's desperate to win it, and he was muted yesterday. So I think he owes a performance. So if he turns up on the day, I mean, I'm saying before, I saw him play against Spurs, and I don't care who he plays against. If he plays like that, the game is difficult for United. So do they need your Pogbas and people like that to grab the game by the scruff of the neck and really turn up?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe needs Chris to smash Lionel Messi's nose again, because I think that just put him off a little bit. I mean, he's a world-class player.
Yeah.
But he's at home, in Spain, and he will want to win it, because not saying that it's his last chance, but he's 33 now. So listen, we know that I mean, there's one or two of their players that didn't really play up to the standard. Coutinho, I didn't think particularly had a great game. The ball from Suarez, the header probably would have got to Coutinho had it not hit Luke Shaw.
Yeah.
And that was just in that slow start that we had, that we let them in. So, listen, we know it's going to be another big ask, but as I've just said earlier, they've done it twice already. So who's to say they can't do it again?
And
they've
so
got a chance, haven't they, at least?
And Solskjaer got his tactics right yesterday for you, and will he have to change them just a little bit next week? Because at some point, they're going to have to go for it.
Yeah, I think so. I think he knows that, and he'll keep those cards close to his chest. But I think he got the tactics right without the end product. We didn't really give them a problem in their own box.
Yeah.
We had things that flashed across. Keeper came out and punched a couple of things. One really good chance at the end where McTominay played Martial through and he just miscontrolled it. Things like that were sort of huff and puffed a little bit, but just didn't turn into anything. And I think that's what they need. If they go to the camp now and they get chances, they need to take them.
Yeah, I think they can. I think they can. I'm looking forward to it. You know, my heart is saying they can. My logical head says it's Barcelona and Messi and it's a difficult one. But Andy, I guess, you know, this time next week we'll be on the phone again and we'll be hopefully celebrating a Manchester United win. Thank you very much, Andy.
No problem, Paul.
Cheers, mate. That's Andy Ritchie, former Manchester United centre forward.
Love Sport.
Millwall QPR missed an opportunity to pull further away from the bottom three as they fought out a scoreless physical derby at the Den. I don't want to talk about that. We're going to speak to hopefully Jimmy Carter in a sec. I was going to talk about VAR and the referee, but I gather we've got Jim at the moment. Jim, how are you, my friend?
Yes, all good. Is that you, Mort?
Yes, my friend. How are you, sir?
Lovely. I'm fantastic, mate. I'm sitting in the garden in my house in Hertfordshire. The sun's shining.
Is it really?
It's beautiful, mate. Oh, it's a lovely day.
Listen, it's always good to be able to sit, mate. Did you go to the game last night?
I was at the game, yeah. It was a tough game, to be fair. QPR, give them credit. They've come and set their stall out and probably had the better chances in the game, more, to be fair. Obviously, off the back of a dreadful string of run of results. Yeah. Obviously, our game plan was to maybe try and get some points on the board, obviously, after West Bromwich Albion win on Saturday. So it was always going to be a tough London derby, Morts, and that's the way it turned out.
Yeah. And you know what, Jim? I mean, to be truthful, I was doing commentary on it, and I thought 5 minutes in, the ball needs substituting. It was in the air. I've never seen some people. We got good players, QPR, like Massimo Luongo. I've never seen him hook the ball on as much.
Yeah.
It was almost like QPR tried to play the Millwall way, which is direct, but weren't very good at it, and it became somewhat of a war of attrition. I actually looked at it and thought, if you consider the games that Millwall have got coming up, this was the winnable one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
No, without a doubt. I mean, I thought before the game, Paul, just purely on the way that QPR have been going of late, not playing well, conceded four at the weekend.
Yeah.
I just thought if this was tailor-made for us to get the 3 points. And then looking at the games that we got coming up, thought that if we had got the 3 points yesterday, last night, I thought we would have maybe just got enough points to see us safe. But obviously, not getting the 3 points and just getting the one, you look at the running that we've got, and it's gonna be tight. I'm hoping it's not gonna go to the wire. We got last game of the season against Wigan, so it's still very, very tight down there. Three teams on 41 points. We do have that game in hand, though. We do have the game in hand against Bristol City.
Yeah, that's going to be hugely
on the 30th.
Yeah, I think that's going to be hugely important because, you know, Sheffield United at Bramall Lane is going to be difficult. Brentford is going to be difficult. Then Villa away.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
You know, and then Stoke at home and Bristol City at home and Wigan away. You know what? It's not inconceivable that you could lose all of them. I don't see that happening, to be fair. Millwall will have far too much fight. I don't see that happening. But it's going to be tough.
It certainly will. I mean, obviously, Sheffield United away, as you say, 100% going to be tough. But we showed, as we played Leeds the previous weekend, scored two goals. We're beaten by the better side on the day, but we've shown that we can go up to the top teams in the division and compete and score goals away from home. So it's for me, you know, that's not a given for Sheffield United.
Yeah, I agree.
We could get something there. We could definitely get a point, if not possibly more, if things go our way. So, you know, and listen, Villa is going to be a tough one. Stoke, I think that's winnable. They don't score a lot of goals, Stoke.
Yeah.
For me, that's one that you'd look to get the 3 points. Bristol City, they're free scoring. They're scoring home and away. So for me, that's going to be a real tough game. And listen, we don't want it going to the wire on the last game to try and have to win or get a point at Wigan, because that's going to be nerve-jangling for everyone.
Yeah, that's not right. Listen, I wanted to ask you one thing. I think it was in the first half where Lee Gregory, the ball's been put over the top. It's a race between Lee Gregory and Joel Lynch, and the ball's coming down, and he gets clipped, Lee Gregory, and goes down. How did you view that, Jimmy?
Well, I didn't have a very good look at it, to be perfectly honest with you. But so difficult for me to comment. But I mean, did you feel that it was a pen?
Well, I'm a QPR fan, and commentating on the commentating on the game as I see it, I'm thinking, oh dear, he's off. Because it's a foul. Right. It's one of them where Joel Lynch is looking over his shoulder, waiting for the ball to come down. Lee Gregory slowed down a bit, and Joel Lynch has literally trampled on him, literally clipped him down. Do you know what? It's a foul. And it's one of those where the ref, if he makes a decision, then then Lynch is going off. So what he does is he makes no decision. And for me, he bottled it. For me, he bottled it. And the thing about that is you could look back on that as a pivotal moment, because QPR go a man down, and especially as the two centre half did really well heading the ball. They cleared a lot of stuff. It's a different game.
Well, it sounds like that was a particular game changer. As you say, if the centre half goes off, you know, they've dealt with big balls coming in. They would have had to deal with bigger balls coming in if the player got sent off as well. So, listen, it's one of them where sometimes decisions go for you, and certainly on that occasion, QPR had that little bit of luck, and listen, that could be a massive decision that ends up being very, very significant come the end of the season.
And I want to ask you about one of your old clubs, Arsenal. Napoli is a difficult game. They're a good side, aren't they?
They are. They are a good side. I mean, Ancelotti's got them playing really, really, really well. They're going well in the league. Listen, they'll come and be organised, Morse. But Aubameyang, he's going to be fit for tonight. I think he's had a little bit of illness problems recently, so it looks like he's going to come back into the side for tonight, which is a big boost for Arsenal.
Yeah.
Paul, I think Xhaka's got a slight fitness doubt over him, and also Koscielny. So it'll be interesting to see what side Unai Emery puts out. But
they're strong at home too, though, Arsenal. I mean, you know, they're not great away, but they are strong at home.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think that Arsenal could get an advantage to take to Napoli, and I think they're going to need to have that as well. So, you know, listen, a 1 or 2 nil win at the Emirates tonight would be, you know, exactly what the Arsenal fans would be looking for.
Jim, thank you very much, my friend. I hope to bump into you one day at the ground, and we'll have a cup of coffee or something.
Oh, Mort, always a pleasure, mate. You take care, my friend.
Cheers, my friend. See you soon. That's Jimmy Carter, former Millwall and Arsenal winger. It's 21 minutes past 2. This is Love Sport Radio.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Love Sport.
Wow, I've got this opportunity to rant. They call it a rant. I'm not going to call it a rant. You know, I'm not going to call it a rant. I'm going to call it a challenge. And it's a challenge to everyone out there. There's been a lot about racism in football recently. Loads of issues have been discussed. You know, Sterling's abuse. It started at Chelsea, Montenegro, the England fans, Danny Rose's desire to get out of football due to his experiences. And it was one thing that got me thinking about this. It was Jermaine Janus when he sort of said Rose has a responsibility to fight it. It got me thinking. Initially, I thought, well, what about you, Jermaine Janus? You're putting the responsibility on others. What about you? Because I never heard Jermaine Janus speak out when he played. And I know how difficult that is. In fact, Rose and Sterling should be applauded because as far as I'm concerned, in my 30-odd years playing and coaching and managing in football, these are the only two current top players that have spoken out while they were playing. I can't remember, and I could be wrong, I can't remember in my time current players actually coming out and speaking about it. But then it got me thinking, to you lot out there, listeners, the wider audience, and not just my wife, because I know she's listening, she always listens. Love you, Sharon. What do you lot do? We all shook our heads and tut-tut-tutted at Montenegro and the racist behaviour. But what about you? Because sometimes it appears that we hold these charged with dealing with it to a higher standard than we set for ourselves in terms of behaviour. But do we truly understand racism, or are we guilty of, I suppose, I don't know, education by soundbite or by buzzword? Do you ever reflect on your behaviour? Would you acknowledge if it was ever, in fact, racist in nature? The question I have for you is, why do we do nothing? What's the impact of doing nothing? You look at the Chelsea fans abusing Sterling. The keyboard warriors posting racist tweets. Do you think it's their first time? I'm telling you, somewhere along the way, they'll have come across someone, we'll have all seen it, who chose to do nothing. Who did nothing. And I wonder what they'd have been like, even if they'd been that way, if someone had challenged their behaviour. I'm not necessarily saying at the game, but in their lives. If someone had just stopped them and said, do you realise what you're doing? Do you know what you're doing? But you know what? No, we do nothing. Someone else's job. We just shake our heads and tut when things happen. Why, when it counts, do we sit on our hands? So for me, the question is, what do we do? We have to trust our instincts, because you know our gut tells us. We're uncomfortable with something because we know something's not right. We know it's wrong. So we have to educate ourselves. Because the way I always think about it is, you're a parent and your child comes home from school upset at racist abuse they've received. What do you do? How do you deal with that? What do you say to your child? In fact, what if your child was a perpetrator? What would you do? How would you deal with it? We have a responsibility to educate ourselves and those in our lives so that when it matters, we do something about it. We don't do nothing. For me, it's just about courage. It's about courage to ask if you don't know. It's about courage to do something if you do know what you're doing. But not to do nothing. Because I think that's what we're guilty of at times. We're guilty of tut, tut, tutting when we see it. We're guilty of shaking our heads when we experience it. But we don't actually do anything about it.
Love Sport.
In the studio with me is producer Mike, ITK, in the nose, in the house.
Yeah, I just want to talk a bit about Arsenal-Napoli. I'm going tonight. Managed to snag some tickets in the North Bank. I am actually, if I can do my Mystic Mort's prediction,
yep.
I'm going to go, Arsenal 2, Napoli 1. Honestly, I think Arsenal will win.
Arsenal are good at home.
They're
fantastic at home. Napoli are a good side that score goals.
Napoli, I think, will go with two strikers. One of them is Milik, Poland international. The other one is Dries Mertens, who played for Belgium in the World
Cup.
Fantastic player.
Good player.
Luckily, I think one of the guys that's going to miss out is Lorenzo Insigne, the Italy international.
Good player.
Oh. Tiny player, yeah. But good player.
I know
player.
You're talking about good player.
But he's dangerous. So luckily, I hope I don't see his name on the team sheet. But I just think Arsenal at home, I don't think they'll dominate the ball at all, because I think Napoli will come there and they will want to dominate, because that's the kind of team they are, that's the kind of football they play. But under Carlo Ancelotti, they have not been as good as they were under Maurizio Sarri last year. And I think everyone's got this kind of narrative, you know, they want Chelsea to go through to the final and Napoli, so it can be like the Sarri derby. But I think Arsenal, if we get a decent result here, have something to take back there in the second leg in Naples, I think it could happen.
For me, my worry for Arsenal is, I think they've got to win by two clear goals tonight. I think if they can win 2-0, they can win 2-0 or 3-1, I think they've got to win by...
Can you see Arsenal keeping a clean sheet, Mort?
No, I can't. Oh, that's the problem. I can't. And you know how poor they are away from home. Something happens. I don't know what it is, but they don't seem to travel very well. And at this level, I think that Napoli, who can score goals...
Yeah.
Will make it very difficult.
The reason I think that is, it's a kind of Wenger hangover, if you ask me. I think the Wenger sides of the past 10 years were always known for being a bit weak when you're going away to a big side. And I think that's still... Because don't forget, that's majority his squad.
Yeah.
He's brought in, three, four new players. The majority of that team and the mentality of that team is still very much Arsene Wenger's, because he was like an institution. For Emery to come in and change that straight away, I think we've seen a big change in the style, and especially at home, but away from home, I haven't seen that. And I think that comes down to mentality, and that will take a lot longer than one season to fix.
Well, do you know what? It's going to take some transfer windows. It's going to take surgery. They've got to cut out what is wrong, because and that's going to be personnel. You know, you're going to have to get rid of a few. But having said that, going forward, you've got a couple of Europe's best centre forwards. Yeah, you do if you can play them both. I mean, it's difficult to play them both. What's happened to Aubameyang? He's fit and raring to go, is he?
Yeah, he's fit. I think in terms of because Emery doesn't really like playing with two strikers. I know that we played like that against United. He went with Aubameyang and Lacazette as a two, and then Ozil in behind. I don't think he likes playing with them two. And I think as an out-and-out centre-forward, for me, Lacazette is a better all-round player.
Yeah.
I think Aubameyang's an instinctive striker, isn't he? But Lacazette is the whole package. He can hold it up. He can turn it around the corner and run as well. He's a good passer. He's got good vision. So I think he just feels more of that.
Lacazette's a goal scorer.
He is. He's a natural goal scorer. But Aubameyang, I don't know. I see him as more, as I said, like an instinct striker. He knows where to be. But
sorry, I got that wrong. Aubameyang is a goal scorer.
Yeah.
The thing I like about Lacazette is, you see, in Europe, there's going to be spells where you're under pressure, you haven't got the ball. He's an outlet.
Yeah, that's where you need it.
He will actually hold the ball up.
He will.
Whereas Aubameyang needs other people to do it. Needs Lacazette. Or someone else up front that he can play
off. The thing about Aubameyang is he can do nothing for the entire game and then he'll pop up with two goals, and that's just the kind of player he is. But Lacazette, he can do so much more. I think our worry, obviously, is defensively, just seeing Mustafi in the starting 11, which just, honestly...
I love it, because like I said to Ben, it guarantees, there's goals.
Yeah.
See, if I was a betting guy, I'd put goals on it in Arsenal's goal, because at this level, where he's going to get challenged minute by minute, he's got mistakes in him.
I think the kind of media and Arsenal fans need to lay off Mesut Ozil. I'm seeing here that people were questioning him after the game at Everton because he was named captain, didn't necessarily have a good performance. I mean, come on, how long has Ozil been around? You know what kind of player he is. Stop putting tags on him that he's not.
Well, Ozil has to play well. The team have to play well for Ozil to play well, because he needs the ball. He needs the ball, and they need to be able to find him. The team have to dominate possession as well. So they have to play well. And he's the barometer. If he don't play well, very rarely do Arsenal play well, and he doesn't play very well. You know?
Yeah, it's true.
So, Slavia Prague, Chelsea. I mean, Sarri has said not to underestimate him, yet it appears he might be resting a tired Eden Hazard.
Yeah, well, not only that, but I think the Chelsea Twitter account underestimated him, because they tagged the wrong Slavia. They tagged the wrong Prague, so I think they need to sort their stuff out. But the team, I think this would be an easy tie for them. I mean, away in Hungary in a European game, it's not the easiest thing. But I think they'll go there and get the win. I don't think they'll have a problem, and they'll
about traveling well. Semi. If they travel well, then it shouldn't really be an issue. I mean, they've got to be one of the favourites. No disrespect to Arsenal.
Excuse
me. They've got to be one of the favourites. They're a good side.
Of course so.
And with Hazard, I mean, Hazard is putting in a body of work at the moment that puts him in that top class racket. Yeah. It really does.
Do you know what he's doing? He's saying, hey, Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I'm here.
That's what he's saying.
I'm going to turn up. But you know the thing about Hazard, I got a lot of stick for it, but because my mate's a Chelsea fan, and I was like, how comes he's just not consistent? And I'm like, when it gets towards the end of the season, he thinks, they might be watching. Real Madrid might be looking out. I might make an impression here.
No.
Because I feel like Hazard can just decide to switch on, because that goal against West Ham, he was literally like, people saying it's bad defending. I don't care what kind of defender you are. If you're running at that pace in the box with that agility, if you touch him, that's a penalty.
It's a great bit of skill. And he gets kicked all over the place, by the way. I think he's a wonderful player. And the saddest thing that's going to happen is we're going to lose him.
Yeah.
Football in this country is going to lose the first, and we'll only really cherish him once he's gone.
I don't think it's too far to say I think he's the best player in the Premier League. In terms of natural ability. I'm not saying in terms of work rate or consistency, because obviously you've got Aguero and Kevin De Bruyne, but I think
he's a good player.
In terms of a natural, because that dribbling in the box, that close control agility, I only see players like Lionel Messi do that.
Very few players.
Even Cristiano Ronaldo can't do that.
He's a top quality player, and like I said,
it'll be sad to see him.
Saddest thing for me is that he's going to be gone.
Yeah, but I think it's time for him though, Mortz, because he has really been at Chelsea. He's tried. He's been there, what, five seasons now, maybe? And I think he's earned this move to Madrid.
I think it's time for him to play at the highest level. It's time to go.
It is literally time to go.
I'm saying that to you too, by the way.
It's time to go. Okay.
And hopefully Napoli aren't going to say that to Arsenal. It's time to go.
I mean,
what do you think the score will be? 2-1 to Arsenal?
Arsenal 2.
On your way.
Napoli 1. Mystic Mike.
Mike in the know. Thank you, Mike.
This is Love Sport.
You've been listening to Upfront with James Gray, the podcast edition. You can listen to me live every weekday from 1 till 3pm on Love Sport Radio. And don't forget to leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.